Hey there, tax fans. Welcome to State Tax Talks with me, your host, Joe Tantillo. I'm a tax attorney at the Hodge and Russ Law Firm looking to explore the nuances of state and local tax law. Here on the show, our goal is to keep tax informative, simple, and fun. So if you're ready to talk tax, turn up the volume and dive into this episode of State Tax Talks. Folks, welcome to another episode of State Tax Talks. This week is part two of our interview with Mr. Tim Noonan. We're going to continue our discussion of what to expect in a New York residency audit, including some of the nuts and bolts of how the audit process itself works. What if I don't want to be taxed as a New York State resident, but I don't have it in me to make that domicile change? Is there anything I can do, or am I stuck?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes there are a couple exceptions to this. Like if, you know, people want to stay here, like there's a rule called the 30-day rule. And under the 30-day rule, even if you don't want to bother all this stuff moving to Florida and doing all this stuff, if you can during 1 year, you know, if you want to do this next year, right? I don't want to be a resident next year, but I don't want to do all this business that you just talked about. Like you can do the 30-day rule. The 30-day rule says if you don't have a place in New York, if you have a place somewhere else, and you don't spend more than 30 days in New York, well then voila, you're magically not a resident that year. So that's one way to sort of, you know, it's just a one-hit wonder, right? It's a one-year thing. You can do it for 2 years or 3 years, but that's a special kind of rule where you don't have to go through all this business. It's super black and white. So that's the 30-day rule. There's also something called the 548-day rule. It's a similar concept, you know, so it's somebody who isn't going to change their domicile, but they don't want to pay New York taxes for a while. The 548-day rule requires you to spend over the course of 548 days, which is an 18-month period, you got to spend 450 of those days or 15 out of 18 months in a foreign country. So, you know, and look, we have a lot of folks who are going to London for a couple of years, or they're going to Portugal or something like that. They're not going to be there forever. It's not a permanent move. They're not giving up their domicile. But if they can meet this 548-day rule, again, spending 15 out of 18 months in a foreign country, there's other rules that sort of limits the amount of time you can spend in New York in a similar proportion. So that's, again, another sort of kind of, again, it's a quick hitter, right? So you could just do it for this 18-month period. You're not a resident, but you don't have to go through all this five-factor business to avoid residency taxation if you do one of those.
So for the listeners out there, there's actually, you know, a few options for things that you can do in terms of planning and steps that you can take before you actually get audited. And we'll talk about the audit process a little more in detail in a few minutes here. It doesn't have to be the case that you just try and wing the move. You know, you can take some proactive steps so that when that audit notice does come, it's a little bit easier for you to resolve it and to prove that you actually did leave New York and land somewhere else. And before we talk about the nuts and bolts of what actually happens in an audit, I just want to circle back to statutory residency, because we talked about it a little bit earlier, and I think it's an area that sometimes trips people up, because despite the mechanical nature of the test, there is some nuance to it. And most importantly, with respect to, you know, well, do I really have a place in New York? Do I have a permanent place of abode? And, you know, for our listeners, what is a permanent place of abode, or a PPA, as we often abbreviate it to?
Yeah, and maybe, Joe, like, just to back up a little bit, like, you know, we talked a lot about like people moving to Florida and stuff like that, and, you know, the domicile test. You know, this statutory residency test, it generally comes up in like a different context. And it is sort of unique to, I think, New York, because what you have is a lot of people who live in Connecticut or Jersey or Pennsylvania or, you know, some neighboring state. But, you know, they come to New York a lot, so they get an apartment. So they get an apartment in New York. So now they're in a situation where their home, their domicile, is in Connecticut or Pennsylvania or something. But they're spending a lot of time here. They got a place here. So it sort of creates this potential that, oh, holy cow, I could be a resident of New York too. So the statutory test comes up a lot in that context. Again, so we end up talking about a lot of different things in the statutory cases, a lot differently than we do when someone moves to Florida. Because like we talked about at the beginning, you know, if you're moving to Florida, you don't want to be close to 183 days in the first place. But again, to your question, so what's a permanent place of abode? Like, that's like any living quarters that you have access to in New York. So it's a big home, it's an apartment, it's a small studio, anything like that, that you basically have access to, a place, any place in New York, that's going to be a permanent place of abode. It doesn't have to be your primary home. It can be some crappy apartment that, you know, you spend, you know, a few weeks or a few months in when you're visiting New York for work or something like that. But it's any type of living quarters can constitute a permanent place of abode under New York's test.
So I just have to have access to it. I don't actually have to use it even?
Well, I mean, there's litigation around the question of like whether you need to use it or how much you need to use it. But yeah, it doesn't matter whether it's, you know, a place you own or a place you rent or even a place like your parents own, but you have unfettered access to it and, you know, you contribute to the maintenance of it or something like that. So yeah, so it's a connection to a place, any connection to a place in New York, you just got to be careful. I mean, it's nuanced. Again, like I said, there's litigation going on now about how much you need to use a place, but if you have access to a place, then you got to ask more questions about whether that's going to trip you up under this test.
So, I mean, if the PPA prong of this test is that nuanced, how nuanced is the actual day count portion? I mean, do I just count nights that I sleep in New York or?
Yeah, I mean, I say it's not that nuanced. It's sort of blunt, like any part of a day counts as a day in New York. So you wake up, you spend your whole day in Connecticut, you pop into the city to see a show, boom, that's a day, right? You're in the city all day, go out, have a good time, crash at your apartment, wake up at 7 a.m., that's a day, right? So it's blunt, you know, so I wouldn't say it's that nuanced. Any part of a day counts as a day.
What if I'm just driving, passing through the state? I live in Connecticut, but I have to pass through for one reason or another.
All right, fine. So it's not totally blunt, right? So there's some exceptions. So if you're just traveling through, that doesn't count as a day. Don't stop and get a sandwich or something like that, because then it's probably counts as a day. But yeah, travel through doesn't count as a day. Actually, and the other exception is if you're an inpatient in a hospital, good news, that doesn't count as a day either. But any other sort of presence in New York, if your spouse is in the hospital and you have the terrible tax sense to go visit your spouse, that's a day for you. Not for your spouse, like that kind of thing. But, you know, other than sort of that medical exception and the travel exception, every other sort of presence in New York counts as a day.
Right. So if you are actively planning around statutory residency and you're traveling through New York on the 90 and you stop at one of the new Shake Shacks that they have there to get a burger and a milkshake, think twice about it, no matter how delicious Shake Shack is.
Yeah. Well, hold up. Is the Shake Shack like off like the highway or is it like in the rest area?
In the rest area.
They have Shake Shacks and rest areas?
They do. They're brand new. I just saw one this week, which is why it came to mind.
That's awesome.
Yeah, they totally upgraded. It's going to be way better now.
Like on the 90? Like
yeah.
The regular?
Oh, yeah, because we do that drive a lot. So.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's great news. So that's probably not going to count. I think I'll grant you a Shake Shack exception. I think if it's like on, you know, if it's like on the rest area or something like that, if it's sort of like a stop incidental to travel, like you're getting gas, you're getting a burger, that's okay. If you're stopping off and going to like Capitol Grill or something like that and having a big filet, and that's probably a day. So
right.
That kind of thing.
The next Noonan Notes article is going to be titled The Shake Shack Exemption.
Exactly.
It's groundbreaking state and local tax practice on the podcast right now.
It's the best thing I heard today. Shake Shack on the 90. It's nice work.
It's exciting.
Yeah. Sweet.
So, you know, how do they prove this out, where someone is every day? We talked about it. Is it the same for statutory residency as it is for the time
same
factor?
Thing. Yeah, cell phone, flight records, passports. Again, there's the one app. It's called Moneo. That app's awesome. You stick it on your phone. It tracks where you are. Keeps sort of, again, record of where you are. It's awesome.
What do I do if I happen to have a day that's unaccounted for or a couple of days? You know, am I toast?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. These days, it's more unusual to have a day, you know, where you're unaccounted for because of your cell phone and stuff, but you know, you're not toast. I mean, if like, you know, or if you're a T-Mobile guy or a Cricket Wireless or something, and you don't have a cell phone that's tracking you, you don't have Moneo, and you fly to Florida on Monday and you're in Florida on Tuesday and Wednesday, just kind of goofing around on the beach. And then you fly back from Florida to New York on Thursday. Yeah. Technically speaking, if you were just sitting on the beach all day for 2 days, maybe there's no record of that, but there's some common sense there, right? Like, well, you probably were in Florida if you flew down on Monday and you came back on Thursday. You know, it's tougher if you live in Connecticut, right? And you have 2 days in the middle of the week where, oh, you've kind of fell off the grid. The New York tax people are going to say, well, we're going to assume you're in New York and you live in Connecticut, so you could pop over easily. So That gets a little tougher, but again, we find less and less that there's these unaccounted for days. It does get a little difficult though. Again, like we'll have, like there's a separate tax in New York City. So if you live in Westchester and you have a place in New York City, again, a pop into New York City counts as a day there. So you just got to be careful there. And there's this kind of case where you want to have that Mineo or you want to have good sell records because, you know, the burden of proof's on us. If we can't prove we didn't come into the city, we, you know, that could be a problem.
Right. Right. So the importance of keeping good records and good documentation is critical to success in these matters.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially in this sort of day count stuff. Like you really, it's, you know, it used to be, you know, I'd have sort of clients say, oh, I'm set, man. I just use cash all the time. They don't know where I am. Like, dude, that's terrible. Like you're in trouble.
Worst case scenario.
Right. Like you actually, as bad as it sounds, you want to be tracked because the burden of proof's on us.
Right. All right, let's pivot to the nuts and bolts of what actually occurs in an audit. And for the purposes of some of these questions, assume, you know, I am the hypothetical taxpayer. I'm Johnny taxpayer in this scenario, and I'm getting out of New York. I'm done with it. Taxes are too high. Didn't like the way things were managed during COVID. I don't like the cold and snow. I want to be in Palm Beach or Austin, Texas, or one of these sunny, new, exciting places. So I move, I file my non-resident return the following year. How long do they have to audit me?
Yeah, 3 years from the date you file that tax return. So it's like, that's the statute of limitations. So yeah, if you file your taxes, you know, April 2023, they have until April 2026 to knock on your door.
And so if I don't file, and because I don't have to file anymore, right? I moved. I have no New York source income. If I don't file, there's no statute of limitations?
Yeah. They can get you in April 2048 or something. Yeah. So there's no statute. It's sort of open forever. So, you know, look, for that reason, filing is good, right? So you sort of put the government on notice that you moved and start that clock a ticking. And, you know, we find that most of our clients have some, you use the term sourced income. Like, even if you move, like, look, you usually move like during the year, right? So you'll file your last year as a part year. Oh, I moved on September 23rd, 2022. So you file as a part year resident return. You know, that could trigger an audit. So, but yeah, you need to file to get that statute ticking.
So, okay. I move, I get audited. How do I even know I'm getting audited for starters?
You'll get a letter. Don't worry. Yeah. But no one will show up at your door. You know, you're not going to get a phone call. You'll get a nice letter that says, you know, congrats, you know, you're under audit.
I mean, do I need to panic? Like, I don't want to go to jail. I wasn't trying to break the law here. Do I need to worry about that?
Yeah, nobody's going to jail. I mean, it's a civil tax audit. You know, so they're rarely criminal. It's just, you know, they're looking to collect some cash from you.
So what actually happens? What's the process? I get this notice. I get a phone call. I don't know how to handle this. What goes on?
Yeah. Well, sure. Joe, you got to call your trusty tax lawyer, first of all. Right. But you'll get the letter, right? Your accountant's not going to get the letter. So normally, you know, of course, what we see is folks will call up their accountant or they'll call up their trusty tax lawyer and say, help me. Right. So, but the letter is just going to be like, hey, you know, we want to fill out this questionnaire, you know, send me your tax return. What'd you do to move? You know, send me your cell phone bills, like be a bunch of questions. And that's sort of typical. There's different iterations of the first audit letter, but they're just going to ask you for a bunch of stuff. Right. And, you know, no one's going to show up at your door. You're not going to have to testify or sort of, you know, even you give an interview. Like usually they won't talk to you. They're not going to talk to Johnny taxpayer. You know, Johnny taxpayer is going to hire, you know, his lawyer, and the lawyer or the accountant is going to sort of handle the back and forth.
So I shouldn't, you know, pick up their phone call and have a lengthy 2-hour discussion with them about everything I did in the 6 months I spent in Florida to cement my move.
You probably don't want to call up the tax auditor and have a long conversation because look, I mean, they're just normal people, like, but you know, they're trained to sort of, you know, catch people and, in maybe incriminating statements or something like that. So, and look, as I think we're talking, this is somewhat nuanced. So, and there's a lot of misconceptions about what the rules are. So you just don't want to get on the phone with, with a tax auditor who's trained to ask the right questions, just better not to do that. Not, and again, not because you got anything to hide, just because, you know, it's complicated and you want someone to help you through a complicated situation.
Mm-hmm. A real anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law type situation.
Absolutely. Yep.
So this process with the auditors, let's say I'm the wise Johnny taxpayer. I call my tax attorney and, you know, how long is this thing going to take? I want to get this audit over with. It's stressing me out. You know, what can I expect?
Yeah. Chill. Like, I mean, like it's not going to get resolved in like 2 weeks. Like it'll, you know, the government moves slowly, you know, so these things aren't going to go super fast. It'd be probably going to go on sort of a good day, you know, 6 to 8 months. Like that's, if you're done in 6 to 8 months, you're doing good. You know, the more typical audits that are a little tougher are going to go 12 months, 18 months, something like that. So it's a lengthy process. There's going to be, in the old days before COVID, we'd get the auditors into a conference room and give them all the data and they'd spend a couple of days going through it. And then we'd have meetings and, you know, now a lot of that's handled through email and through mail and such, but you know, there's a lot of back and forth, so it's gonna take a while.
What if it can't be resolved with the auditor? Do I get my day in tax court? Does Johnny Taxpayer get to plead his case before a jury of his peers?
Yeah, I mean, eventually you could go to court, but there's no peers, there's no jury. Like the New York's got a tax court, so you can, if you go through the audit and it's, you know, doesn't go well and the tax department doesn't agree with you, it's called the Division of Tax Appeals. Like you can take your case to court. I mean, I think I'm on like year 23 of this and I can count the times I had to go to court on a residency case, like, you know, on two hands, maybe. It's not a lot of cases go to court. They'll get resolved. They'll settle. But if you want it, you know, you can take it all the way to New York's tax court for sure.
You mentioned that you've, you know, handled a lot of these cases and you've litigated a lot of these cases. And before we, you know, move on to the next question that I had lined up, I'm just wondering, do you have any favorite cases or any favorite stories that you want to regale our audience with?
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned the one at, you know, in your awesome intro, like the you said Gayed. I say Gayed, you know, to, you know, you say, you know, tomato,
tomato, tomato.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But the Gayed case. Yeah. I mean, that was a case where he lived in Jersey, but had a place in Staten Island for his parents and was way over the day count. So it was a statutory residency case. So they said, hey, a place for your parents, that's a place of abode for you. And so we had handled the audit of that case. And my now partner, Joe Andres, was just a, you know, lowly associate back in the day. So he went there to check out the place, you know what I mean? To see, hey, you know, what's this place about? The guy said, it's for his parents. You know, we want to sort of look at it. And the guy had like this big old mean dog who, like, I think he either bit Joe or something like that. So Joe was just like, he had just sort of started. He's like, what the hell have you gotten me into, kind of thing. But in any case, that case goes all the way to the Court of Appeals, New York's highest court. And, you know, on the question of whether or not, look, if you got a place for your folks, is that a permanent place of abode for you? And we won. Like, we ended up winning that case. And I got to argue it before, again, New York's highest court. It's awesome. It's online. You can check it out. It's still there. That was a blast. And that was sort of a great case for us and great for the taxpayer. And it's, you know, so that was fun. Joe got bit by a dog. So that was a lot of fun as well.
We'll remember that part forever, exactly. Including, you know, the win and then the story of Joe getting bit by the dog.
It's like amazing. Everybody wins except for Joe.
Yeah. Oh, all right. Circling back to the nuts and bolts of the audit. So obviously, Hotch and Russ has an exceptional track record of winning these types of cases. But for Johnny Taxpayer out there who's listening, what happens if they lose?
Yeah, I mean, get out your checkbook and write a check. I mean, ultimately, that's, like I said, these are civil tax cases. So if you lose, you pay up. I just, you know, there's just not all that binary or black and white. Like, these cases, like I said, they can be nuanced. The issues are difficult, and sometimes it's just not going to be clear. It's not going to be black and white, and that's fine, you know. So ultimately, what happens in a lot of these cases is you settle, right? Just like any other matter, where, you know, you come to an agreement, buying and selling a car. Sometimes you're just negotiating. So that will happen a lot in these cases. I mean, I like to think if someone comes to us at the front end and we kind of help them through the move and they actually listen to what we say, we're not going to have to pay up. Like, we're not even going to have to settle. We should just win. But people don't come to us, you know, all the time, or, you know, sometimes cases are complicated. So but it's not black and white. So you can, there's definitely opportunities here to resolve cases and settle and agree to disagree, pay them some money, and you're done.
So interest and penalties, do I need to worry about that?
You got to worry about interest for sure. I mean, if you owe the government money and the interest clock is a ticking from day one and the rate's high, it's like 7-8%, something like that. So it's just something you got to keep in mind, like, you know, when you're thinking about, well, should I take this position? Should I take this risk? Should I claim I moved? That kind of thing. Expect that if you lose, that interest rate's ticking. And again, it's, you can't really negotiate out of that. Like, that just is what it is. There are potential penalties that could apply. I mean, our experience is you can, particularly in a, you know, again, these issues are difficult. Where someone's domicile is thorny. You can almost always negotiate out of penalties. Look, tax department's usually pretty good about that, right? They're not looking to jam someone up totally. And if it's a toss up or it's a tough case, like, you know, you can usually, again, get yourself out of penalties. I mean, they'll use it as a chip, of course. The first proposed bill you're going to get is going to have penalties up the wazoo. But I think the expectation is those are negotiable.
So we talked about losing, but what if I win? I win. I hire a Hodgson-Russ tax attorney. We win. I'm stoked. Is that it? New York can't audit me ever again. Like, I'm totally in the clear now.
I mean, no. I mean, you make a lot of money. You have a place in New York. You're spending time here. Like, you could always be on the radar. But look, if you win or you settle and they agree, like, all right, whatever. You move to Florida. You're good. You're probably set. There's always the statutory test, right? The day count test. That's always a potential risk. But if you get through this process and you win, you're probably good. They're probably going to leave you alone, and they got lots of other people to bother, right? So if you've gotten through and you won, you're going to probably drop off their radar screen.
Well, Tim, I see that we're getting towards the end of our time here. I just wanted to thank you for coming on the show today, for sharing your expertise and your knowledge with us. We both know we could probably have talked about this for 5 hours.
That'd be a boring podcast show if we did that. Yeah.
We got to, we got to save some of the secrets too, the insider information.
Yeah, totally.
But Tim, thank you again for coming on the podcast this week. It was an excellent discussion of what to expect in a New York residency audit. Folks, that brings this episode to an end. We'll be back with many more topics in the field of state and local tax in future weeks. Thanks for listening. Thanks for joining us for another episode of State Tax Talks. If you're interested in listening to more episodes, we're available on all platforms where podcasts can be found, including YouTube. If you enjoyed this episode of State Tax Talks with Joe Tantillo, please give us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast platform. And if you're in need of a tax professional, you can contact the tax attorneys at Hodgson Russ. Go to www.hodgsonruss.com for more information. And until next time, I'm Joe Tantillo, and this is State Tax Talks. Catch you later, tax fans.